Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are going to be talking about James Comey and the IG report that came out about his conduct and other conduct within the FBI and the DOJ during the 2016 election. It was 500 pages. I did not read the whole thing, but suffice to say that there's a lot going on there. We are also going to continue the conversation that kids are being taken away from their parents at our borders. And honestly, if I have to change the name of this podcast to "Kids are being fucking taken away from their parents at the border," so people know what's going on, I absolutely will. Like I said last week, this will be on the show every single time until there is a resolution here.
I totally agree. It's just, it's too big of a story. But the real reason it's continuing to be a story is that the administration is continuing to make it worse in terms of messaging and how many kids they're kidnapping at the border.
Right. Yeah, it gets worse and worse and worse. And I hope to God that as we continue to cover this, it just almost becomes repetitive or better. Like, at least I hope it does not get worse. But right now it is getting worse and it is fucking scary. So before we get to that though, Varsha, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good. I hit a museum. I got to see Incredibles 2, which I've been waiting for 14 years. Yep. And it was so good. So good. I remember watching this movie when it first came out and being like, this is like everything. You know, it has like this family story. And then the second one was just even better. And it's just so good.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. I had a good weekend. We were just like still like moving shit and unpacking, and my life is a big fucking mess, basically. Like a literal mess. Like, it looks like a tornado has hit my house. So trying to get through that. So, but otherwise, very boring weekend, which is really nice. Before we jump into the news block section, I actually want to talk a little bit about feedback. So, you know, we here at Hellbent Headquarters are so grateful for the support and encouragement that we get. And, you know, as I say, it warms my cold feminist heart to know how much, you know, this show means to a lot of people and, you know, that how much it means to me. But, you know, I think that at the risk of being repetitive, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on feedback unless there is something critical and something that we need to talk through or think through on the show, because especially now the news is ramping up. I mean, I feel like it's always been bad, but I feel like it's been ramping up lately, and I want to dedicate as much of the show as possible to getting through these very dense, very important stories. It's not that feedback is not important, and if there is feedback that needs to be talked about, I will absolutely do so. But I think that if it's just, you know, unless there's something really, really outstanding, I think that that is going to be something that we're going to do on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I agree. I think it just has to be something that's really big and something that, you know, listeners want us to talk through. And yeah, it just makes a lot of sense doing it that way, because for some reason, June is a big month for the news.
Seriously. Seriously. All right, Varsha, so let's start with James Comey and this IG report. So can you give us some background? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, so basically this is the big finale to the Butthurt emails investigation that has been going on for what it feels like eons. And like political pundits do all the time, there are ways to spin this for both sides. But I just want to like quickly go over like what it said. And so what the IG report said is just it went over the FBI's handling of the Clinton email investigation. And it has like a really complicated picture of how the DOJ acted, how FBI acted as a whole, and how certain FBI employees acted inappropriately or were appropriate. And when it goes through all of that, it basically says the investigation itself into Hillary Clinton was legitimate. It was it had integrity. They followed through it correctly. The investigation itself was correct. The decision not to charge Hillary Clinton with criminal misconduct was also correct, and not to charge other people was also correct. What was incorrect, what was inappropriate, was James Comey's handling of his July press conference, where he didn't notify the AG at the time, Loretta Lynch, or Sally Yates, Deputy Attorney General. What was also inappropriate was James Comey's surprise October letter, not just because it interfered in the election, but because we actually found out he had the warrant and knew about this fucking laptop since September. So this motherfucker was the whole month before releasing that letter. And so that's another thing that was inappropriate. And then also certain individuals in the FBI have personal political views against Hillary Clinton or for Donald Trump or vice versa, right? And it's fine to have those views, but they were expressing those views and it was interfering with their job. And so those are like the essential takeaways from this investigation, is that the investigation into Hillary Clinton itself was correct. It should have gone through, which, you know, we can quabble over, but whatever, like, she admitted in the beginning that she did something stupid with the private email server.
Right, right.
The investigation itself, you know, had weight and was correct, and the conclusion of not charging her was correct. What the issue was personal conduct by James Comey, other FBI officials, and at times, DOJ officials.
Well, okay, and so here's my takeaway from this IG report. Comey disregarded all of the protocol and bent everything that wasn't a hard written rule. When he announced that there would be no criminal prosecution of Hillary Clinton, he spent the first part of that press conference, he waited until the very end to announce that. He spent the first part basically condemning her for this private email server. He called her careless. He basically dragged her through the mud first, which you just don't do. Also, like you said, Varsha, the FBI had warrants and knew about the second round of emails since September, and then him releasing that letter so close to the investigation, or I'm sorry, releasing that letter about the continued email investigation so close to the election was really fucking shitty. And the way I've heard it described is that when it says that he improperly weighted the importance of his actions. Basically, he was really concerned about looking like the FBI was helping Hillary Clinton, but he wasn't concerned about the FBI looking like they were hurting Hillary Clinton, makes sense.
Basically, the IG was having none of his conceal or reveal, like, dilemma. Like, Comey has, like, repeatedly called his dilemma as, like, concealing or revealing what the FBI was doing, and, you know, use that metaphor multiple times, but the IG report was like, fuck that. That was a false choice. Comey's actual choice was between adhering or departing from Justice Department protocol in fucking with elections. The report makes clear that he should not have fucked with elections. He should have, if he really wanted to release this information, done so when the warrant came out, done so much earlier in September, late in September, or he should have done so after the fucking election. Also, more importantly, the OIG, like the Office of the Inspector General, notes like multiple times that Comey didn't raise any of these concerns throughout this whole investigation and from July to October with Lynch or Yates. And I don't want to read too deeply into this, but notice all of Comey's people like that he despises are women.
Women.
Mm-hmm. Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates. For some reason, women who are his superiors, technically in the DOJ chain of command, like he doesn't feel it's necessary to inform them of his decision making. Even when it expressly states that he should, like that is what the protocol is, like that's what the chain of command is in that case. Like maybe there are other cases where he has free reign. But in this case, it was very clear that he should have been talking to Loretta Lynch and Sally Yates. But he had this, like, insane feeling that they weren't, like, pure enough from the investigation. They weren't, like, you know, Loretta Lynch hadn't recused herself or gotten fully involved. You know, they were being too easy on Hillary Clinton or whatever. He had this feeling of impropriety. And decided
Which you might. And I'm just, you know, trying to like think through this a little bit. You might be able to say that about Loretta Lynch. There was the whole like scandal of Loretta Lynch talking to Bill Clinton on the tarmac that, yes, you know, especially before Trump and all of this shit, even the implication of impropriety or the optics of that were really important to the FBI. So you can make at the time an argument to say that Loretta Lynch maybe wasn't the person to talk to. But do not try to tell me that Sally goddamn Yates was somehow, she is like the most apolitical person in this story thus far.
Exactly. Also, it expressly says that he ordered the FBI staff not to tell the Justice Department about his decision to make that statement in July because he expressly didn't want the Deputy Attorney General to tell him not to do so. Because guess what? He knew that Sally Yates
that she
knew better.
Was going to shut that shit down. Yeah. Knew she was going to shut that shit down. And Comey's a showboat. And Comey thinks that he is the only person that could possibly make the right, quote unquote, right decision. He thinks that he is so special that he alone has the moral objectivity to say what was right, what was wrong, what's criminal, what's not. Which we have a whole system in place because we know that no one is able to do that, but apparently that doesn't matter to Comey. And what I will say is that with this whole IG report, while I think it's really important to illuminate what happened, this all feels like a day late and a dollar short, right? Like, this all feels like, I mean, Comey's fired. And I have a whole thing about, like, him being fired and my feelings about Comey. But ultimately, the issue here is that we can condemn this guy and we can look at this and the, both sides are going to, you know, pick this apart and use it for their gain, political gain and all that. But at the end of the day, we had a person who fucked up.
Exactly.
And because of that fuck up, there's a very serious argument to be made that we have Donald motherfucking Trump as our president because this guy is a grade A fart sniffer and thought that he was the only person who could make a judgment call here and refused to consult anyone else.
Exactly. And what's really frustrating about James Comey's sanctimony is not just that stupid ass op-ed he published in the New York Times, but
fuck
also
that op-ed.
The
fuck
IG
that op-ed.
Found that James Comey himself used a personal email account to conduct unclassified FBI business. And again, while, you know, Lawfare and other publications have made clear that this was just like a minor protocol like infraction and he didn't really share classified information, he still made a fucking mistake. He's not perfect, right? And so he had this notion that because he is like this perfect, like divine right has given me the power to control the FBI and I am solely responsible for its image and its like conduct, I am like have to be like the vessel for like perfection. But in fact, I have made multiple mistakes over my career, one being so the same exact mistake that Hillary Clinton made. And that's
right. The irony is
this
deep.
Why the IG like that it made sense that they didn't charge Hillary Clinton, because when previous departments of state or other departments have made similar mistakes in terms of mishandling this kind of digital information, no one has been charged because no one was intentionally disseminating classified information in that case. Just like James Comey, in using a personal email account, was not intentionally disseminating classified information, nor was he touching it. He was just conducting business, and that is against protocol. And so this is my issue with James Comey, is that he just refuses to accept any responsibility for anything. And this is why I found like the IG report like really cathartic, is that because James like Comey is like this perfect centrist Republican institutionalist, he can't go out and say that the IG report is incorrect. He can say that I disagree with it, but in the end, it's okay because this is what institutions are there for. And so like, even though he's not going to admit responsibility or take responsibility for fucking up in July 2016 and October 2016, at the very least, there is a document out there for future historians to realize James Comey fucked up. And that is the title of a multiple, like all the JSTOR articles will be here about October 2016. The title will be James Comey fucked up. Fucked up. The 8-foot giant fucked up. This is how the 8-foot giant fucked up America. Like, this is why it's so important that the IG report like actually happened and, you know, Horowitz went through all this, because it just gave us closure, even though James Comey won't give us that closure. And again,
I do love that. And I do think that is actually very important that, you know, I know that you, as like a student of history, if you will, that like you like to say that, I mean, the point of history is not to create present parallelism, but more to understand and create the narrative of what happened, and so that we can possibly use that and understand that going forward. So documents like this are important. Like I said, it feels a day late and a dollar short. And in fact, it is, because Trump is motherfucking president. But this is important because it does reshape going forward. And all we can do now is hope that we have looked at the situation and learned something from it. And I know that sounds very optimistic, but I think that we need to understand what happened so that we can look for the signs of it happening again.
Yeah, because, you know, another problem with this was, you know, the rationalizations we have for why Comey talked about the Clinton investigation and not the Trump-Russia investigation, which started in July 2016, right? And so there are rationalizations for that. There are whole levels of, like, rationalizations by the Trump team about how this undermines Mueller's investigation, which it doesn't, right? And so this document is important just as, like a stake in the ground for what is true and what is fact. And I think that is, like, the one thing I can respect from that James Comey, like, New York Times op-ed, is that he says, like, we have to accept this IG report. Even though I disagree with it, it is good that it's here. Because it's, like, the one stake in the ground that we have for facts recently, because you have people on Fox, you have people in the White House continually discrediting FBI and DOJ and how they conduct their business. And this is, like, right, the one thing that says, here are the specific mistakes the FBI made. Like, here are the—
right, here's the mile marker, here's the line in the sand, here's what happened, here's the truth.
Exactly. And I think that's right. Why, and that's another reason it's important. I just think, you know, the one, like, another, like, gratitude check of mine was Hillary Clinton finally being able to tweet emails. That was the one thing keeping me happy last week.
Right. Seriously. Well, and I will say there's also some serious irony in all of this, even beyond the email thing, which also Mike Pence was using a personal email account. I don't even want to fucking talk about like the irony of the email situation. But there is some interesting email on the FBI and DOJ side, because Comey, his whole argument was that he was protecting the reputation and the image of the FBI. And what he actually did was create an atmosphere that damaged the reputation of the FBI and degraded the way the public views the FBI to a point that, you know, it is actually alarming. And so he's saying the FBI is supposed to be transparent, which it's really not, but okay, so that's his argument. But now the FBI and the DOJ are being accused of being so opaque and so secretive that what his intention was, if that was actually his intention, backfired. I think there's real irony there.
Also, another thing that there's irony for is that, like, he knew as head of the FBI in 2016 that most people in the New York office hated Hillary Clinton's guts. He knew they were leaking like a sieve, and he did nothing to stop them. So, like, that was, like, the actual disease, was people using their political preferences to affect FBI policy in the sense of, like, leaking to journalists and whatever. And it's fine to, like, whistleblow and, like, stuff like that if you truly believe in something. I'm not saying, like, decrease the transparency of the FBI, but he knew they were doing it improperly. Right. And he knew, like, that was one of the reasons that he actually leaked that October letter, is because he knew that it might leak some other way. And so it really was about saving face to protect the fact that people in the New York office were fucking up with their political views, and he wanted to do it himself so they would get shielded. So he's, like, done this on multiple levels, where he has actually discredited the FBI by taking it on himself. Also, like, I understand that he is taking, like, this oath of loyalty to the FBI, like, this higher loyalty that his book is about, but technically, his oath was to the motherfucking Constitution.
Right, right. I was just gonna say, it's not to the FBI, it's not to the president, it's to the Constitution.
And, like, I know, like, there is no article in the Constitution that says, don't release a letter to Congress 10 days before the election, but I do know that it was, like, official policy to not do this, and he still violated that. So, like, again, like, it's not like he directly violated the Constitution, but I don't know how loyal he was to his oath to the Constitution if he did this to protect the FBI, because that's what he's been saying all this time. He's been very open about it, that he wanted to protect the image and like the credibility of the FBI when, quote unquote, when Hillary Clinton got elected, right? That's all he cared about. So this notion that he wasn't a political pundit, that he wasn't like involved in like these political type decisions, is wrong. He was making
the IG report is saying that they found no underlying political motivation, which I think is a load of garbage. I think, you know, people who say that they don't have like ulterior motives or underlying political bias or underlying religious bias or underlying bias of any kind is absolute bullshit. Yep. I mean, grade A manure. So to say that they found no evidence of underlying political motivation, I think is really disingenuous and actually pissed me off more than if they had just said like, yeah, you know, people in the FBI have biases. Like, we're people. We're not machines. Like, we obviously have opinions, and we obviously make choices based on those opinions, even though there's this veneer of objectivity. I think objectivity is a myth, and I think that people who try to be objective are lying liars who lie. And for the IG report to so blatantly take up this gauntlet of objectivity, I think is kind of like navel gazing in a way. They want to be objective and they call themselves objective, and then they completely ignore the fact that that is not how this played out at all. I also want to say something about Comey, because I think especially on the left and with a lot of Democrats, there's this tension between hating Comey's guts because he's a douchebag and obviously pulled the Clinton campaign apart by the seams. And this other side where he was instrumental in starting the Russia investigation. And, you know, his testimony is going to be critical going forward in any obstruction of justice cases. I can hate him and also think that the reason and way he was fired was crap.
Oh, yeah.
I think that can absolutely exist simultaneously. I could think that he was I think that he fucked up, but I can also think that he's telling the truth and that he was genuinely concerned that what Trump was doing was damaging to democracy. You know, people are not just black and white. I think one of my favorite ways to think about this is actually a Harry Potter reference. So J.K. Rowling in an interview, and I know you guys are probably laughing at me, but in a J.K. Rowling interview, someone asked if Professor Umbridge was a Death Eater. And, you know, and what J.K. Rowling said is she was like, look, the world is not sorted into Death Eaters and not Death Eaters. You can be mean and horrible and shitty and self-serving and not be a Death Eater. You can believe in Voldemort's cause and not be a Death Eater. And so that's kind of how I look at this, is like, you know, people want to put figures like James Comey in one camp or the other. But I think that you can be fucking terrible and you can, you know, have created this system, but you can also be part of what takes it down.
Yeah. And I think that's like the only thing I take comfort in about like James Comey, is that like, yes, he was really bad at his job of being FBI director in this really specific way in 2016, but also he's really good at taking notes. Like, he's really good at,
right?
And so because he's good at not lying and really good at taking notes, he was like the perfect like enemy for Donald Trump to take down.
Right. Well, and he might be full of shit, but he believes his shit and he's not lying. Like, he's buying his own bullshit, but he's not lying.
Exactly. Like, he's buying his own bullshit about like a higher loyalty and all that crap, but he isn't lying when Donald Trump said, can you drop the Michael Flynn investigation? Like, he isn't lying when Donald Trump said, you know, do you like, will you take a loyalty oath? Right.
Right. And he's not lying when he says that he has a higher loyalty. Maybe he does. Like, maybe in practicality he doesn't, but he believes he does. He's not lying about it. He's not. That's kind of a hard concept to describe, but do you know what I mean?
I agree. Like, he really believes in this stuff. And even though believing in this stuff screwed us over in 2016, it's helping us a little in 2017 and 2018, right? And
right, exactly.
That doesn't make him, like, a perfect person or an evil person. It just makes him a human being who's made multiple decisions in his life that have simultaneously helped us and really hurt us.
Sunbasket has been rated the number one meal kit by leading publications, and it's no wonder why. They offer 18 weekly recipes with options for paleo, gluten-free, Mediterranean, lean and clean, vegan, and more. But for me, what matters the most is that it's so easy to eat healthier. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home, and you don't have to go to the grocery store. And I'm lucky because Alex, as we all know, does all the cooking, but I made roasted chicken with artichokes last night. And by I made it, I watched Alex make it, but I'm still very proud of myself. And now you get more options than ever. Just go to the Sunbasket app or sunbasket.com/hellbent, and you can learn more and get $35 off your order. Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh organic produce, responsibly raised meats and seafood, and cage-free eggs. Everything is pre-measured and easy to prep. You can get a healthy and delicious meal on the table in about 30 minutes. So go to sunbasket.com/hellbent today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent for $35 off. sunbasket.com/hellbent.
So Devin, let's talk about kids being kidnapped from their parents at the border. What's new this week? What have we learned this week about this?
Well, so I think by now we all know the basics, the framework of what's going on. On May 7th, Jeff Sessions announced this policy that the Border Patrol would be separating children from their parents if they were found to be crossing the border illegally. And I remember at the time, you know, Drex and I did a show and we both said, and then I talked to Aditi and we both said, all of us were like, look, I don't think this is a policy so much as rhetoric for his base. And I have never been so wrong in my life. And I'm wrong a lot. And that was the most wrong I've ever been. Because not only did they make this a policy, but they have doubled and tripled down on this as a policy. So what we've learned is that dozens and dozens of parents are being split from their kids every day. And then the kids are labeled as unaccompanied minors, which is another story that we touched on a couple of weeks ago about unaccompanied minors versus these kids being separated from their parents. Unaccompanied minors who come over are normally older. They're usually teenagers or you know, older children who are crossing by themselves to meet up with relatives in the United States. So this is a little bit different. But once these children are separated from their parents, they are then labeled as unaccompanied minors, which I think will be important going forward as we look at statistics and we look at how we can count or measure the damage of what's going on. So what we learned is that between October 1st, 2017 and May 31st, 2018, at least 2,700 children have been separated from their parents. But here is the real fucking kicker. 2,000 of those kids, 2,000 out of 2,700 have been separated over the last 6 weeks of that window from April 18th to May 31st. So currently that means that we are taking 45 children away from their parents each day. That is quite the motherfucking clip at which we are running here. And the stories and the images that have come out around this are difficult. And that is the gentlest way I could possibly put it. You know, there are images of children crying, of parents crying, of kids in what amount to cages. And that's even before we get into exactly what's going on. But so Representative Pramila Jayapal, who's a Democrat from Washington, she visited a federal prison and women recounted stories of being told by Border Patrol agents that, quote, their families would not exist anymore and they would never see their children again. And that's what these people are being told. So it's a really, really difficult story. And it really, it gets more horrific the more we get into it. So I just want to take a minute to tell you that we're going down into this pretty deep. So Varsha, can you give us a little bit of the logistics or semantics here? So what happens at the border? How does this work? Where do the kids go?
So there's two kinds of people who like show up at the border. There are people who show up at the border who are crossing and like disappear in the system, and they're not seeking asylum, they're just crossing illegally, right? They become unauthorized immigrants. But this other group of people are people who are coming at a port of entry seeking asylum, right? Or they're crossing to seek asylum. And technically, if they cross, technically there is a law that says the U.S. is allowed to prosecute them. But if these parents are crossing the border illegally and the U.S. is deciding to prosecute them, that means that like their kids cannot stay with them in federal detention, right? And so they separate the kids. And so when they separate the kids from the parent, the kid is no longer like a child of the parent. They're no longer a family. So they're categorized, as we talked about, as unaccompanied minors, which is why this policy of separation exists. So when Jeff Sessions says no tolerance policy, technically the DHS is right when they say they have no real policy of separating kids. The no tolerance policy is saying, I am going to prosecute every single person who crosses the border, even if some of those people are seeking asylum. See, in the past, under the Obama administration, previous administrations, when someone crossed the border to seek asylum, they would just process the asylum paperwork and get them asylum if that was like what was happening, like if that was legitimate. And they wouldn't prosecute them first, right? Because it's just like, you're going to get asylum right anyway. Why spend all the money and time prosecuting you for something that isn't going to matter in like 10 months or whatever?
Or at least they would start by setting up an asylum hearing.
Exactly.
That was the first part of the process.
Yeah. And what's happening now is the Trump administration is saying, fuck the asylum hearing, fuck all of this. We're just going to prosecute you first. We'll worry about the asylum later. And the reason we're worrying about the asylum later is because we believe you're lying about needing asylum. Because we're
right,
and because we don't want brown people in our country, we believe you're lying about needing asylum, and so we are going to prosecute you first and delay this asylum as like use asylum as like a delaying tactic for as long as possible. And in the meantime, while we're prosecuting you, we have to take your kids away from you.
Right. Okay. So when this administration and officials say that they do not have a policy to separate families at the border, that is technically true, right? We're, you know, wording wise, sure. In actuality, in practice, because of this prosecution policy, kids are being separated from their parents. So yeah, fine. It does not say we separate families when they get here, but that is what's actually going on. That is the practicality of it. And I think when we get caught up in these discussions about wording, that the Trump administration loves that. Kirstjen Nielsen loves that. Oh. That's what she wants us to talk about, because she, you know, she's the one that said we have no policy that separates kids and families at the border. And everyone's like, hey, fuck you. Of course we do. Gaslighting, blah, 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 blah. But that's the conversation that they want to have, because they're like, oh no, we can fight about semantics. And then we're not talking about the fact that it's actually fucking happening.
Yeah.
And it's like when Alex and I fight, so we go to a lot of therapy, because I think everyone should go to therapy. But one of the things that we learned is that if you fight about semantics, and if you fight over the specific language that the other person is using instead of focusing on the underlying concepts, you are never going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And if you want to have a good fight, you have to talk about what you're actually fighting about and not the word that they chose. And I think that we can apply this to what's going on here.
Exactly. Like Kirstjen Nielsen tweeting that this morning or yesterday or whatever, she knew that's exactly what a bunch of people were going to say. But the thing is, she ruined her own game, because this morning she gets up and starts defending the no tolerance policy.
Right.
She has like no idea what's happening. And this is another reason that they're going, you know, like the same time, like about a month ago, Donald Trump called people from MS-13 animals. And
right.
He like, at the beginning of this year, he called African countries shitholes. Like, he wants people to debate the semantics, just like you said, because it gets them, like, debating and defending the wrong thing, at least in his head, right? And so then you message that to the base as something totally different from what's actually going on. So this morning, Fox and Friends is like, it's not really a cage. It's more like they made chain link fence walls around the kids. I'm like, so you mean a cage?
Oh, you mean a fucking cage? I cannot fucking deal with this. I mean, the absolute misdirection. Like you said, the MS-13 thing. So now the media is fucking debating whether he meant MS-13 members or immigrants. It doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter if their walls made out of chain link fence or a cage. What matters is that children are being taken from their parents and put in a place that is not with their parents.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're put up at a 5-star resort. Doesn't fucking matter.
I saw another hilarious tweet online. Someone was like, doesn't anybody care that Paul Manafort is now being separated from his children? Yes.
No.
The American carceral state is bad. I'm glad you're realizing that now. Like, yes, it's bad that Paul Manafort is separated from his, like, teenage child. But that's because he committed a crime. But you know what's really bad? This happens every fucking day when someone is convicted of, like, a nonviolent drug offense in the United States. The American carceral state is bad. Amazing for coming to that conclusion. Like, I'm so happy that you've realized.
So well done. Well, and you know what? And here's the other thing. Okay, yeah, that's really sad for Paul Manafort. But you know what? That his kid is with their mother.
Yes.
It's not like this kid is being, like, pushed out onto the street or kept in a chain link wall fence place. No, they're fucking fine. I'm not saying that it's great. And like you said, like, good job, sweetie, at coming to the understanding that we all get. But, like, please spare me your false whataboutism bullshit. Keep me out of that narrative. I do not have time for it. I'm fucking tired. Because, look, here's the thing. These kids are sent to the Office of Refugee Resettlement within 72 hours. That's the theory. This obviously does not happen this way because nothing ever happens the way it's supposed to. But they're kept in government facilities, which are the cages that we're talking about, or short-term foster care, but for days and weeks and months while these ORR officials try to find someone, a relative or someone to take one, assuming that this child has relatives already in the United States. So this is not new, and I think that's really important to talk about. These facilities that are holding children that are designated as unaccompanied minors are not new. And there's tons of kids there that have been there for a long, long time. But like I said, before it was mostly older children. That's not better, but it was a different thing. These were kids who were found crossing by themselves. Now kids are being taken and putting there as, I mean, we're talking babies,
yeah,
and toddlers, small children, and there's no process, there's no plan for reunification here. Honestly, like, these motherfuckers are not even really trying. So there was, according to Vox, there was an ACLU lawsuit over the separation of the families, and a DOJ official told the judge, quote, once a parent is in ICE custody and the child is taken to Health and Human Services, the government does not try to reunite them and instead attempts to place the child with another relative in the United States if the child has one. I'm going to repeat that. The government does not try to reunite the kids with their parents.
It's bananas. It's just so cruel that I cannot even come up with the words to explain how cruel this is. They're literally just admitting that we are the boogeyman under your bed who, like, take away your kids from you. Like, we are monsters.
We are those people. And you know what? You know, there's also, they put out a flyer in English, by the way. Like, have you been separated from your children? Call this hotline. A lot of these immigrants that are being detained, they don't have access to a phone. Even if they do get access to a phone and they call and they ask, there's no way to get back in contact with them. They're not carrying around cell phones. And that's honestly, even besides the point of what I'm going to talk, I mean, that's fucking horrible. And that's almost, it's cruel in another way. And to use another pop culture reference, you know, in the Hunger Games, the President Snow, who's the big bad guy who puts together these sacrifices, basically, he's like, you know what's more dangerous than fear and despair? Hope. When you give people hope, when you say, we're going to get you back with your children, that is soul crushing because they have no fucking intention to do so. I read a bunch of articles about this over the last couple of days and last night, and I was reading about the conditions that these kids are in, and one of them talked about, you know, a 4-year-old who's so traumatized that they won't speak, who had to teach the other kids, the older kids there, how to change their diaper. And the Border Patrol and ICE agents aren't really allowed to hug them or touch them. They can like give them toys and whatever, but they can't really touch them due to policy. There've been allegations of sexual and verbal abuse and physical abuse at these centers. And so they're trying to cut down on that. You know, there were accounts of the agents telling these kids to stop running around and to knock it off. And, you know, 5-year-old kids were just trying to play, and there are no toys or books or things to do. And then they're being told to just sit there quietly. And the trauma that this is causing and the long-term damage that has already been done. You know, I couldn't sleep last night thinking about this, because I mean, I have a 4-year-old, and the thought of him being taken and being put in a cage with a bunch of kids that he doesn't know and who told to just sit there and be quiet and not play and not have anything and not have anyone to hug him. I mean, I had to go into his room last night, pick him up and bring him into bed with me because I can't imagine what that would be like. And if for no other reason, if you don't care about anything else, I don't understand how you cannot care about that.
It's just so unbelievably like depressing. It brings me back to like the first moments of the Trump administration, like way back January 2017 when like the Muslim ban came down. I just like felt like so alone. And like at that moment, like it also felt like wrong to feel like afraid and alone, because I had a green card at that point. I am from a country that wasn't on that 7 Muslim majority list. Like there's technically easy ways for me to prove that I am not like the target of this administration. But even doing that seems like a horrible like betrayal of people who are being targeted by this administration. And it's just this whole system of like degrading humanity just makes everyone, even people who aren't the targets of this, everyone who is paying attention, just feel so alone and feel so helpless. And like it makes everything feel dark. And it just brings me back to that moment where like I literally would spend every single day from the day the Muslim ban came down to the day I got my citizenship in like July 2017, like carrying my green card around with me everywhere, which isn't a smart thing to do because if you get mugged or something, you have lost all your documentation. But I literally could not, I didn't have like the peace of mind to leave it at home. I knew that even though I was in San Francisco and Berkeley or whatever, like there was like a chance that I'm safe and whatever, but I didn't have the peace of mind to leave it at home. And this is the same thing here, is like, I don't have kids, but like I have a brother and sister, and there's just like, there's like horrible scenarios like run through your head and it makes you feel helpless. But I think there are concrete ways to help these kids and to like, to stop this from happening. Right. And it's just really important to hold on to that, because, you know, after the Muslim ban came down, it was just really important to go to a protest, to call your representatives, to just keep on it and to keep being outraged and to channel that fear and loneliness into like outrage. And I think this is like the same situation, because a different group of people being targeted, but they are being targeted for the same racist reasons as the Muslim ban, for the same horrible sexist reasons as other administrative policies on healthcare and stuff like that, for the same horrible reasons that you know, people of color are being targeted in this country when it comes to criminal justice. So it's just really important to keep that outrage like hold it tight, because I think that's the only way we get through this, is to like continue channeling that outrage into like real action to stop this horrific policy.
Right. I mean, I guess you're so right. I mean, we have to just keep on this, and that's why, no, we're going to continue talking about this and we're going to continue giving people action items. But I guess I'm just really worried.
Yeah.
Because if we as a country can't rally for children, you know, it started with not funding CHIP and holding that funding hostage, because we're basically just using children as bargaining chips at this point. And we've already accepted that as true. Sort of, you know, like that super depressing tweet, like if we've decided that shooting first graders is less important than gun rights, I mean, the debate's over. And I hate to be, I am an eternal optimist, and I have been my whole life. But if we can't rally for children, if we can't look at these stories and look at these pictures and get something done, what are we going to allow next? And, you know, we talked about it last week, Varsha. Everyone loves to point to Nazi Germany, and that's fine. That's a solid example. But we're not that far removed from where we've been in the past. And I think a lot of people do not understand that. And I think that we need to just be very, very honest about that. And we need to make sure that we are focusing on solutions. And speaking of solutions, the GOP is pretending that they are supporting legislation that would end this practice. So Trump tweeted, and I hate reading Trump tweets, but I think this is really important for context. Trump tweeted, quote, "Separating families at the border is the fault of bad legislation passed by the Democrats. Border security laws should be changed, but the Dems can't get their act together. Started the wall." So I don't know.
Bad grammar.
I'm not even sure what that grammar is doing with its life, but so not totally sure what that means. But I want to point out, just right now, preaching to the choir, there's no law that requires this. This is not a law. This is a policy. And the difference between those two is very important. So the GOP is saying that they have proposed this compromise legislation. So, Varsha, can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So basically, because of this discharge petition nonsense that some moderate GOPs tried to launch in the House, Paul Ryan got really, really afraid, and he created this compromise legislation. And then there's like this good lap bill, which is like even more radical than it, right wing than the this compromise legislation, quote unquote. And basically, it's a plan that covers everything from like border security to DACA to people who are crossing the border and for citizenship and green cards. Paul Ryan is saying that this is going to prevent, you know, the Trump administration from separating kids at the border. But it doesn't do that. It specifically doesn't outlaw family separation. It doesn't stop the Trump administration from choosing to prosecute these parents separately first, and then separating their kids from them, and then doing that process. Because that's what this policy is. This no-tolerance policy is a specific DOJ choice to prosecute parents who are crossing the border illegally, even if those parents are seeking asylum with their children, right? And so this bill, this compromise legislation, doesn't do that. It also has a ton of other horrible things when it comes to ending the visa lottery and a bunch of other stuff. But it specifically doesn't stop family separation.
Right. Well, and I'm honestly so speechless at this point. I mean, and I always have a lot to say, but this sort of this charade that they're playing, this game that they're playing, saying that they oppose this when they really don't. It's also worth noting that this whole zero tolerance policy is in response to what the Trump administration has called a surge of people crossing the border illegally. But we are actually not at all-time highs for people crossing the border illegally. There was a brief dip last year, but now we're pretty much at normal levels. And I think that if let's say this does act as a deterrent in some parallel fucking universe, and there is another dip and it goes down and they can use that as a political win. I mean, do you think, because it's always going to, it's elastic. It's always going to come back up. Even if there is a dip, but if it comes back up, they're going to call it another surge and this process is going to start all over again. And that's why Congress refusing to act, Republicans refusing to look this in the face and fucking outlaw this is so dangerous.
It is.
Because policies are they're slippery, right? They're like, this is a policy. This is what we're doing. We saw what James Comey did with DOJ policies and FBI policies. He said, go fuck yourself, and fucking like blew up our lives.
Exactly. And I understand this, like this, I understand where Republicans are coming from. Like, I don't agree with it at all. And I think it's totally spineless, but I get where they're coming from, where they're just like, how is it like we physically cannot stand up to a president of our own party? Like, how do we do that? We would be bad politicians for doing that. That's just not in the DNA. Right. But I also see the other side of this, where it's just like, you want an amazing political career after Trump, like, blows out of office in 2021 or God forbid 2024. This is how you make an amazing political career. Like I see this as like a real tech, like when you're looking at this strategically or tactically, a good way to survive this horrible like shitstorm is to actually stand out and make a name for yourself. Because
Have long game. Yeah, have better long game.
There's two kinds of people you can be right now. You can be like the person who like stands up and stands out in the media, right? Because that's like the stories that come out. Or you can be the person that becomes like the same mess of Trump supporter that's sucked into the news hole that no one talks about. And that's what they're choosing to be. They're all choosing to be people that no one in the press is talking about because they all just agree with Trump blindly, right? And so I'm just like, you want to stand out? Maybe do something to stand out. And this is what like really frustrates me about like Jeff Flake, John McCain, and all these other like quote unquote
Bob fucking Corker. Go fuck yourself, Bob Corker.
And Bob Corker, because they'll go up to the Senate and like give a fucking speech. They're not gonna vote. They're not gonna use their fucking Article 2 powers to do shit. And it's just like what are you doing? I don't understand. Like, do you actually care about the Senate? Do you actually care about your job? Or are you just here to make speeches? Because if you are, like, you know, it's great that you're retiring, I guess. Right? And so I think that's what's another, like, that's another problem for me, is that they're not even thinking about this politically. It's not even a good strategy. It's just a way to, like, get by and to continue to, like, live off of, a congressional paycheck. Like, that's all it is.
Right.
It's not going to get them like a better job in the future, because there is, at some point, Trump is no longer going to be president. At some point, Michael Pence like loses re-election, God forbid if he runs, right? But at some point, they're on the outs, and they haven't built any way to crawl themselves out of the hole that they're digging in with Donald Trump. And so that's one thing about this. But another thing is just, there's heartless motherfuckers. They're just
heartless motherfuckers. Fuckers.
Like Susan Collins, the so-called moderate of the Senate, was on TV yesterday basically like defending this policy and saying that the Families Belong Together Act, which was written by Dianne Feinstein and now co-sponsored by every single Democrat in the Senate caucus, she's saying that legislation is too broad. It's not broad at all. All it fucking says is don't separate families at the fucking border.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. I was really disappointed.
So disappointed.
Because I really thought that if nothing else, Collins and Murkowski were going to break this line. And I really thought that they were going to be the ones to, I mean, they have on so many other issues. I'm shocked that this is the one that Collins is like, no, I'm going to go ahead and side with the heartless motherfuckers.
Yeah, like, I get it. You want to vote for Justice Gorsuch because you're a Republican? Fine. You want to vote for the tax bill because you think taxation is theft? Fine. But Susan Collins, like, you are a woman. You are someone who understands what parenting means because of your implicit support for Planned Parenthood, because you are implicitly more pro-choice than other Republicans. I don't understand how you can be against keeping families together at the border. And also, just as, like, to every single, like, GOP member of Congress who's, like, there right now, and every senator, if you tell me that you're pro-life again, like, fuck you.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Like, fuck you. No motherfucker better tell me that GOP is pro-life ever again.
Ever again. I was actually just talking about this with someone. I prefer to call them anti-choice, but for this conversation, let's go ahead and call them pro-life. You have got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. So, yeah, if anyone ever says the term pro-life to me ever again, I might just throw something at them. Maybe I'm just gonna throw something at them.
Oh yeah, and another defense of the GOP is that, like, you know, they're like the party of Christianity or whatever, or like party of like family.
Oh,
or whatever.
This is where I was going next.
Yeah. That also fell apart this past week because Sessions, you know, our attorney, esteemed attorney general, used the Bible to defend this bullshit. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders defended that bullshit again. So basically,
yeah,
he used, I'm not an expert on this, but he used Romans 13, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except God, and those authorities that exist have been instituted by God. So do you have, like, any insight into this and, like, how this is, like,
picked
up?
Yeah, so basically, this passage in Romans 13, also plays into, you know, that those authorities that exist have been instituted by God is this idea when people say like this Trump has been chosen by God, or they said that about George W. Bush a lot too, like has been these evangelical, especially leaders, they've been chosen by God and God has bestowed upon them this responsibility. So it does play into that sort of narrative. But here's the other thing about Romans 13. This is not the first time that Romans 13 has been used to justify horrific and racist government policies. I was reading this great article, and there are actually two very notable uses of Romans 13 in American history that I feel like are very important. So during the Revolution, those who wanted to stay a British colony used it to try to dissuade the rebels. So basically saying, look, that our governing body is Great Britain, is the crown. And the Bible tells us to stay loyal to our government. They are our government. We shouldn't try to break off. So the people who were anti-America in the beginning used this. So, you know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. And it was also used in the lead up to the Civil War. Pro-slavery advocates used Romans 13 to justify laws that created the framework for slavery, including brutal laws that basically said, because slaves are property, you can use force and any means necessary to, quote, return them to their owners.
Yeah.
Which my stomach just turned. So the thing is that this specific sentence, Romans 13, taken out of context, does look like the Bible tells you that God tells you to follow your government. But there are many more passages that talk about having a healthy question of your government and call for, you know, basically making sure that you don't follow your government more than you follow God, which again, you can believe or you cannot. And it's also worth pointing out that there are plenty of Bible verses that talk about caring for the poor, the sick, the strangers from the homeland, and for children. Again, children.
I guess
so.
Jeff Sessions ripped those pages out of his Bible.
Right. Yeah, just, you know, whatever. But here's the other thing. And the history of Romans 13 is fine, and it's important context, and I think that it's important to understand when this has been used in the past and how it's being used right now. But ultimately, it actually doesn't really fucking matter, because it is absolutely inappropriate for our government to use biblical verses in any sort of government business or professional context.
Yeah.
Like, we are not a Christian state. We do not have a centralized religion for a goddamn motherfucking reason. And that reason is directly in I mean, it's another way that Trump is pushing this, you know, foreign policy because we're America, bitch, right?
Yeah.
This narrative that is created because we're Christian, bitch, right? Like, because we're a Christian nation, which isn't even true, but we can somehow use that to frame our racist policies that are not law yet. And I think that is really important. And it's creating this type of white Christian nationalism that has really been revealed over the last year and a half with, you know, literal fucking Nazis marching in the street, with the rise of this white nationalism and alt-right shit, which is just it's just a polite way of saying racist as fuck. And I think that the fact that they are even, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is even defending the use of a Bible verse to justify this, shows how far we've fallen in terms of the rule of law and how we protect our Constitution.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also, just to be clear, like, I shy away again from, like, historical analogies that, like, are a little bit simple, but I do want, like, this is like a really good one. Like, a lot of things have been called legal in our past, and because it's legal, it's okay to do. Like, you know, it was like slavery was legal. It's literally embedded in our Constitution. Internment was legal. The Indian Removal Act was legal. Like, just because it's all legal doesn't mean it's like a real thing. So this defense that a lot of like conservative hacks on Twitter or on the news will use is like, oh, but they're crossing the border illegally. So like, you know, you have to prosecute them. Like, don't you like rule of law, Democrats? And I'm just like, that bad faith argument is like fucking stupid. There are certain laws right. in the country that have to be changed. Just like, you know, you fucking hate Obamacare. I hate the fact that we deport everybody. I hate the fact right. that we really round up people and steal their kids from them. I think that shouldn't be law anymore. I dislike the fact, right. you know, you want to repeal Obamacare. You want to repeal every transgender protection and gay protection in this like country. You want to like, you know, get rid of Roe v. Wade. I want to get rid of the fact that ICE exists. I want to...
Right, right.
Fucker, right? And
so, yeah, ICE isn't really that old. I'm going to keep bringing this up. ICE is a relatively new... It's a very new, you know, alphabet soup organization. Yeah, just because something is the law doesn't make it right.
Yeah. And again, like, this isn't like... We're not calling for anarchy here on Hellbent. We're just saying there are ways to change laws that are unjust, and it has happened throughout our history. And so... You saying, but it's the law, does not win the argument.
Right,
like,
right.
Obama didn't say, but it's the law every single time Republicans tried to repeal Obamacare. He made a case
right.
for why Obamacare should exist and should remain law. And
remain law.
Obamacare
right.
prevailed because the people wanted it to remain the law. Like, that is
right. As a democracy of the people,
yeah.
it's not what is law, it's what is, remains law. By will of the people.
Exactly. And so, like, there are certain things that we have, like, no control over, right? But there are certain specific things that we do have control over, and that is telling your representatives to support the Families Belong Together Act and to eventually support a Democratic candidate that abolishes ICE. And I just want to quickly say, like, in relation to ICE, because we were talking about how it's a new thing, like, George W. Bush created ICE and DHS. We all know that. But Laura Bush, his wife, the former first lady, had an op-ed this morning, like, super like torching this immigration like separation policy, and like a lot of liberals on Twitter were just like, she has a war criminal husband, George Bush was the worst, George Bush is the reason we yeah. have all of this horrible shit. And I'm just like, yes, that is all true. Like, it would be really hypocritical for George Bush to come out and say we shouldn't separate kids at the border, we shouldn't be deporting people, you know, Donald Trump is a racist. But like, Laura Bush, at the very least, like right. even if she's horrible, even if she's married to a horrible person, at this moment, she has more courage than any fucking GOP Congress member, right? And so like, right. your ideological purity and who you listen to, like, doesn't really matter, because what Laura Bush did this morning is try to convince conservatives that the GOP right. is spineless and heartless, right? And so it's not right. about convincing us. It's not about like us saying, Laura Bush, welcome to the resistance. No, it's about saying, oh, even she recognizes the fact that this is horrible. Even she, a
right.
conservative, someone who was married to a conservative, someone who was married to the person who created ICE, realizes how inhumane this is, right? Like,
right.
Bill Clinton is the reason we have the IRA Act. Like, one of the reasons we have our deportation policy today is because of the act that he signed. But, like, that doesn't mean that Hillary Clinton was wrong every single time she said that Donald Trump's immigration policy was horrible, right?
Right.
So there are people kind of...
I know this is hard for people.
Yeah.
But women are not just, you know, female versions of their husband.
Yeah. And there are like things to say about Laura Bush, and you can like say them in a certain...
There's plenty to say about Laura Bush. I'm not defending Laura Bush necessarily, but I'm with you here.
She, as like a staunch conservative, married to a staunch conservative, even she thinks this is inhumane. This is not rooted in partisan politics. This is just inhumane. That is the point of that op-ed, right? And so I think that's another thing we have to really remember when we are fighting against this. You take allies where you can get them, in the sense like you get
right.
everyone against this shit. It doesn't matter who
right.
they are, who they voted for in 2016, who they donate to. Just get them against this, because this is just so inhumane. This is not like
right.
some arcane tax policy. This is not about...
Right.
Like, this is not about, you know.
Yeah, I very rarely will say this, but you can take this one in a vacuum.
Yes, you can. This one is in a vacuum, like, this is, like, inhumane, and this is a vacuum. Like, you just should be, when it comes to this issue, we are all in a vacuum, and we should be against it. Like, that's basically.
And we should be against it. I don't care. Yeah, I don't care who you donate to. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what you believe about tax policy or anything else. If you're against this, I'm with you.
Yeah, that's great. Like, this is the way you get, you know, everybody's in, like, one room together on this. And Stephen Miller is on the outside looking in. Because that's, like, that's basically exactly what we have to do. We have to get it so, like, everyone turns against Stephen fucking Miller and this administration. Because he is the reason we have this. He and Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions. And we just have to get everyone we possibly can to realize that this is, like, inhumane and disgusting and just totally not what we should be aiming for.
I have the absolute luxury of working and recording these shows in my PJs. It's one of the main perks of working from home. So what I learned about Tommy John, which is a men's underwear company, was launching a women's line, I was really excited. Their underwear and camisoles are so soft and comfortable that I have replaced almost all of my underwear with their new women's gear. And that's a lot of information, but you know so much about me anyway, Hellions. Tommy John quality fabrics and innovative designs are a testament to their commitment to providing mind-blowing comfort, and they are so comfortable. The best pair you ever wear, or its free guarantee, means that if Tommy John isn't the most comfortable underwear you've ever worn, Tommy John will pick up the tab. They've sold more than 5 million pairs of underwear. That's a lot of underwear. And I don't think Paul Manafort gets to wear them in prison, so that makes it even better. So hurry to TommyJohn.com/hellbent for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/hellbent for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/hellbent. All right, Varsha, so we've covered so much today, and it was really heavy, and I know we both were really emotional. So let's do a really quick gratitude check. What are you grateful for today?
Well, I am grateful for two things. One, I already talked about, Incredibles 2. I just really, really love that movie, and I'm really, really happy they did it. Like, they made a sequel, finally, and it was just, everyone has to go out and watch this. Like, I'm not being sponsored by them. I just really think it was a good movie, right? And, second thing I'm grateful for is the Georgetown Lounge or Library. Like, I obviously love libraries, and I had, like, not a lot to do this weekend except do a lot of work and then hang out at the library and hit a couple of museums. So I didn't know that, like, you know, this university library would be open to the public, because, like, the UC Berkeley one is a little bit of a bitch to get into if you're just a public member and you're not a student. And so I, like, came in and, like, I was, like, expecting, like, a big fight to, like, get in, but it was really easy. And I got I should have books, and it was pretty awesome.
That's great. Well, speaking of books, actually, I'm really grateful for this book that I'm reading called Radium Girls. And it's actually the true story of the young women who were hired to paint the glow-in-the-dark watch faces back in the 30s. And the material that they used to make the watch faces glow-in-the-dark was radioactive. And the way that these women did it is they licked their brushes and dipped it in the radioactive paint and then painted, because it was really fine. They had to paint the numbers individually, and then they would lick their brush again. So they were getting radiation poisoning, and they were dying and getting sick. And they actually, I'm not finished with it yet. And it reads like a novel. It is a true, it's a true historical account, but I swear to God, it reads like a novel. And basically they brought a lawsuit against these companies and they won. And so it's a fascinating book. It's a really cool sort of untold history of how women changed this industry, you know, so many years ago. And it's just really cool. It's really good. And it's really uplifting in this difficult political climate.
Yeah, I have to check that book out. That sounds awesome.
It's so good. It is. And like I said, it reads like a novel. All right, so we're going to do a quick dickwad round because we talked about so much. And this is almost like a story that, like, I don't care about right now. It's going to be super interesting when it finally cracks open. But Michael fucking Cohen is the taint team that was assigned to look at the documents that were seized in the search of his office and hotel room and home. It was not a raid. It was a legal search. I think that's important to point out. Something like 99.5% of the documents that they found were found by the taint team to be not privileged. So all these claims of, but it's privileged, are bullshit, which, duh. But, you know, it's nice to know that you're right in a legal sense. We're not sure if he's going to flip. That's kind of the idea. His law firm dropped him. And it's just not looking great for Michael Cohen. And as an extension of that, I don't think it's looking real great for Trump either, because everyone has always said, and I've always kind of believed this, that if anyone could bring down Trump, it would be Michael Cohen. So we can only hope.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is like, I think the reason he's a big wad, and I've been like avoiding the stories about him for the past couple of weeks, because it's the same fucking story. It's like, I intimidated somebody, either a journalist or either somebody else or somebody Donald Trump had sex with, and I'm a bad person and I really shouldn't have passed the bar exam. Like, it's just like, over and over again, and finally it has just cracked where like people are finally admitting that, like, yeah, maybe he's gonna flip because his law firm quit. It's clear that like the people who like searched his office have like a lot of documents, and also like I think he shred stuff, so it's compiling into like just a bad story. And I think the reason he's the dickwad is just, you just have to remember that there are a lot of people who have to do with this administration who are caught up in this Russia inquiry, who have been just committing a lot of crimes, just like haphazardly. And you just need to remember that somebody's paying attention out there. At least someone's paying attention.
Exactly. And then bonus round, Paul Manafort was sent to jail because he is so committed to doing crime that he was tampering with witnesses while he was out on bail under what amounts to house arrest. I mean, I'm kind of impressed. What? Like, not many people are on house arrest and they're like, I'm going to keep criming. Because that's how much I love
it. It's really ballsy to call up like a witness and be like, hey, this is what I did on this specific day. Do you remember it that way too? And then like not realize that like, yeah, the FBI is listening to your phone calls. They know what you're doing. And also just like, do you remember what happened that day? Is it similar to what I just said? Like, it's so obvious that that's witness tampering. I don't even know how to explain this. And I think what's really the Trump administration at this point is that when it comes to Michael Cohen and Manafort, the only defense they have is that, oh, these crimes are unrelated to Russian intervention at this moment. We don't know. Like, we don't know if they are or not. Like, I think Manafort might eventually be charged with conspiracy, or like there are other people who might be charged with conspiracy, which is basically the legal term for collusion at this point, because collusion is so hard to define legally.
I mean, and then there's this other guy, Konstantin Kalimnik, who worked with Manafort, who's also been indicted, but he's in Russia. So, you know, they keep saying that and Kalimnik is like tied into like Putin and Russian secrets or Russian spy agency. So they keep saying that this is not related to Russia in any way, but like, I have a couple of indictments that beg to differ. And since Paul Manafort is so committed to crime, I have a feeling we're going to know sooner than later.
Yeah, I'm like pretty sure at this point that at some point, like, someone is going to be charged with like some sort of conspiracy to help intervene. Like, even if Donald Trump doesn't get caught up in it, there's more than enough evidence for collusion here when it comes to that July meeting in Trump Tower, when it comes to Roger Stone and all of his bullshit, when it comes to Michael Papadopoulos, like, George Papadopoulos, I forgot his name. George
Papadopoulos.
All these different people have had like too many coincidental meetings with Russians. And like, I was just remembering where we were January 2017 when I was still just listening to you guys talk about this, you and Sarah talk about this investigation. And I remember back then the message from the team, the Trump team, was, we have never talked to Russians in our lives. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know her. Like, that was, they were like Mariah Carey in that famous.
Oh, I don't know her.
And then
I don't know Russia.
Like, yeah, I met with Russians, but what does it matter? And then it changed to like, yeah, I met with Russians to, you know, get Jordan Hillary Clinton, but we didn't get anything. So what does it matter? And then, yeah, maybe we got something, but it didn't really change any votes. Like, nobody, like, the voting booths weren't hacked. So what does it matter? Like, the goalposts have moved so far. And I just need people to, like, to remember that and to, like, think of, like, the good old days where, like, it was, like,
I know.
It was too tinfoil hat to think that there was actually conspiracy to, like, commit this crime.
Okay, Varsha, last but not least, let's talk about a couple of action items, so something our listeners can do after they listen to the show. So What's a first?
Okay, so every single person in this country who is listening to this podcast right now has to pause the podcast, call their senator, and tell them to support the Families Belong Together Act or Keep Families Together Act. And they also have to tell the Senate to support the Fair Day in Court for Kids Act. Both of these acts are really important. Both these bills are really important to making sure that we can stop this horrific policy that's happening at the border. And that's like, that's the first thing that everyone can do. And then we can also go to donate to borderangels.org, and we can donate to this organization. It's in Southern California. And basically they put out water at around the border for people who are crossing the border. And it can be especially dangerous during the hot summers. And we didn't really talk about this earlier, but the reason it's returning to like normal numbers, like that surge of people crossing the border, is because it's more normal to cross a border around the summer than it is around the winter time or other times. I just think this is like, in terms of weather, this is like the time that people come over.
That's exactly really right. Important
because not a lot of people have a lot of money when they're crossing the border, a lot of resources, and so it's so essential that, you know, we're supporting them, and this is like one simple way that they support them is they just put out water for those who are crossing the border, and they have rescue systems, they do advocacy, they also have legal consulting.
Yeah, so they're really great. Actually, one of my good friends is really involved, and she leads groups. She's a big time hiker, and she leads groups and put out water for people crossing, and the rescue stations are really important. It's really dangerous to cross the desert down here in Southern California when it's this hot, and a lot of people don't have adequate water and need help physically. I mean, there are a lot of other fucking problems, but I think we sometimes forget that physically this is a very dangerous undertaking as well. There's also Races Texas, which is RAICESTexas.org, and they are legal aid for families in need. So they're a great place to donate if you're not exactly sure where to get started. And unrelated but not unsurprising, I was on their website, and they have 5 offices throughout Texas, and 5 of the 6 offices appear to be run by women, which is completely and totally unsurprising. A lot going on. I think it's important, like Varsha said, pause right here. Well, it's the end of the show, so you don't have to pause, but call your senators, call your reps, get fucking angry. So Varsha, that is it for us. Thank you so much for being on with us again.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yep. All right. Well, I will be back here on Thursday. And in the meantime, race in hell. And please be kind. We need to work on our empathy as a country. So let's work on our empathy.